Yep, I'm on it.
How much hot glue am I allowed to eat?
Hello and welcome to the Provisional Nerf News Network podcast, episode 5. I'm KT. I'm here with my co-hosts, Vile Mods, JoltKing627, and a very special appearance by Grimms. Super excited to have you here today.
Hello.
This is Thursday, March 9th, as we prep for the release of our 5th episode tomorrow. We just finalized that video. Super excited for it to come out. How are y'all doing tonight? Vile, how are you doing?
I'm good. Running a little behind, but...
you don't say!
I only pinged you like 30 times. It's fine. You know, sometimes it technology just doesn't want to play nice with you for some reason. But other than that, good. A lot of organizing around the stream recording room, the craft room, trying to get some stuff done on some projects.
Nice.
So on, so got a lot going on.
Cool. Jolt, what you got going on?
Not much. Worked a little on my integration. That's about it.
All right. And Grim, what you got doing?
I ate some good food, and I'm trying to get all of the thumbnail shenanigans sorted out and whatnot.
Yes. Sweet. Were you able to get something good out of some of the community blasters?
So far, yeah. I think I'm going to use the GNK 200, and then the Boba Fett EE3, and then the patent for the thumbnail.
Ah, good. Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of having the patent sketch on there. Speaking for myself, I just received my third order from Foam Blast today in the mail.
Racing with Lyle, are we?
I am.
You've got some catching up to do.
I'm literally attempting to give him a run for his money. I got a Swift, which is something I have not had previously.
Nice.
And just too good of a deal to pass up. And I also picked up one of those limited. What is that worker blaster that came in the clear red?
The Hurricane.
It has the hurricane.
Yeah, I've got
the Hurricane. Yeah.
I've got 4 of them now.
Oh my god.
Because it was such a good deal.
Yeah, totally. I'm just excited to have one to play around with and have one of the
literally
limited
ones. Who else wants one?
Me. Red is my color, man.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
And I got 4, and hear me out. The reason why is because since nobody cares about Hurricanes, I got 2 of them for low power and 2 of them for high power, because there's a single stage and a dual stage cage that you can get for them. And I just want to get tags with them. Just to kind of be the person that pisses you off because you got
just
tagged.
To prove the point.
I've got an additional idea for you. Worker made an accessory for the Hurricane where you can put mags upside down on them, and it's an adapter. If you could find one of those, you could do like dual 22 round mags or like 25 round drums on them.
No, I think it's more insulting if you get hit with the regular revolver mags that they come with. I think it just adds more insult to injury there.
That's so
it's just going for the maximum burn.
Yeah.
The whole Hurricane platform kind of reminds me of some of the Calico guns I've seen before and whatnot, with the like drums upside down on the top or other stuff like that with like capacities.
Oh my god. Okay. So, yeah, lots to be excited about, including the fact that I was just looking at our YouTube analytics, and we have, after just 4 episodes, we've hit an overall 10,000 views.
Ooh.
Which is a really cool milestone that I feel like we reached pretty quickly. So thank you to everyone out there checking stuff out, listening to the podcast, watching the show. YouTube is continuing to push our first 2 episodes and, like... episode 3, but make sure you watch the new news as it comes out, because that stuff is already 2 months old.
Mm-hmm. Damn, 2 months though. That doesn't feel real.
Yeah,
that's the other thing,
like we
right?
just started this yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, we do an episode every 2 weeks, so time flies real quick. Real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to Disney World to celebrate?
I wish.
Right.
I am still trying to look into getting the podcast actually on other platforms. So
yes.
I am looking into it. It's just I have been a little bit busy this past like week after after we started looking into it, and I there's a few weird things I've got to do, and I'm just like,
No, I appreciate you taking that on, because it was like I felt like I kept banging my head on it and just not making any progress.
Yeah.
So I am really excited to get us on other platforms. But also, for anyone that watched the last episode all the way through, this we wound up with this shtick with Taffy asking me to put images on the screen, and I did it, and like I really like it. Like, I like having the slides on the visual part to the show. I listen to some podcasts that do a YouTube version with slides and then do an audio version without. And like, I know that you can do it. Like, the podcast is completely listenable, the last episode, without the images. But the images do, like, it's fun. It like adds a little something something. So,
well, if you like it so much, why don't you put an image up right now?
If you like it so much, why don't you marry it? Anyway. Okay, the other thing that we're going to try and do with this episode, to celebrate 10,000 views, we're going to try and keep the podcast shorter. So we're going to dive right into the news here. And the first thing that we talked about on the show that we're actually going to talk about in the podcast, because as the original post about it said, nobody cares about the Elite 2.0 trio. I want to putter around the idea or talking about the... not just the Boba Fett EE3, which is starting to appear in people's hands and seems in my brain to be in a state not dissimilar to that of the Mandalorian Amban phase rifle, but also just sort of the general where we're at with the general Nerf limited delivery pattern. Because, you know, as we've said in the past, Nerf seems to be really trying to dig into this as like a their new like prime format, like a focus of their business. So are they really pulling it off? Are they doing it?
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it's there are so many like things that were like kind of falsely advertised. Yeah. Like the cylinder and the darts were supposed to be like metallic and they're baby shit colored. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And just like you brought up, KT, in the video, that, you know, the reports are saying that it's very similar to the Mandalorian with the, like, basically sharpied in, you know, quote-unquote paint. I mean, you know, there's a market for
it. If that counts as weathering, I'm Iron Gopher.
Yeah, basically trash modding. But the
pretty much.
There's a problem with it. Like, this is a market. It exists. Clearly... us as the consumers, people are buying into it. Like, a lot of us have gotten, you know, obviously I've got the Gajala horn. KT, you've got the Needler, you know, like
how many different ways can we pronounce Gjallar horn by the end of the episode?
There's probably many ways. I know at least Destiny players call it Gjallar horn or Baller horn. So yeah,
I have been corrected on TikTok many, many times by people who insist it's Gjallarhorn, which Gjallarhorn? I assume is the
Norse. I've only
heard
Destiny players say Gjallarhorn, so it's like, that's interesting.
Yeah, people insist that the R does not belong. I insist that I do not care. but yeah. I will say, so like, I did a little bit of research on the history of Nerf Limited's delivery, and I found... a couple interesting things. One is just a cursory overlook of the list, because technically the AR Goosebumps was the first limited release. Mm-hmm. Some people like don't count it for whatever reason, just because it was a reskin, I guess. But like, it was a custom, like it was only available that way. You had to pre-order it. I think it absolutely counts. And
of course it counts.
Was...
if you look at it, it's not the only one either. Because look, the G.I. Joe Hyperfire.
Would we technically count the what was it, Supreme
takedown? Yeah, Supreme takedown. The Supreme takedown also factored into my research, but it's kind of a special case. So Goosebumps was promised with a 6-month lead, and it wound up coming 9 months later. So its delay was actually not as bad as some of the other ones coming up. Weirdly enough, because. Or actually, wait, I'm sorry. It has the worst delay compared to the promised time. But what they started doing after Goosebumps had that and the Mandalorian came out a month later than they promised. And then after that, they just started promising 13 months. And so they always did it on time. Because they were like, well, apparently this is just how long it takes us. So we're just going to say it's going to take longer. So it's like airplanes. Like, they say their landing time is whatever, but in reality, they've planned for it to be like earlier.
I will say I'm probably one of the few people, I guess, probably in here that's overall positive on the limited line. And there's just some reasons for that, I guess. It's kind of like, I guess if you looked at it, they're technically, it makes sense for the direction they're going in, because it's kind of like they're not doing the best certain ways profit-wise, so they're like going back to their own brands that they actually own, or like other stuff like that, and they can do these limited stuff.
A lot of tie-ins.
And it's a lot of tie-ins, basically. It's kind of like it feels like they're going in on that thing where it's like, as kids, you'd be like, oh, if they did this blaster, if they did this thing, I'd give them so much money, right? Or whatever. Right. It's kind of like for those kids who would have killed for a prop of something that they wanted as a kid now, and now they can get it now that they're an adult as a limited blaster. Because, I mean, if you were to buy a prop of said blaster, for example, it'd cost you a lot more. So,
absolutely.
And the fact that it actually fires foam darts or anything like that, weathering or like timelines aside, it's something like straight out of your childhood that you would have wanted totally. And whatnot. So I think it's really cool. It's just that some people aren't the market for it.
I agree with you. And I know that, like, for me, like, going down the list of things, right? So Goosebumps was like, there were quality issues with, like, I think a lot of the real issues are what they promise versus what they deliver. Mm-hmm. It's less about, like, whether the concept or the product is good. Because I think if they had simply promised less, or if the Mandalorian rifle, like, didn't require a pre-order, if it was literally just like, hey, we're going to make a Mandalorian rifle, look out for it, and then it shows up on Amazon, people would have been super into it, right? But they hyped it up so much and then could not deliver on the level that they offered. And I think that's part of why, like, I like the Needler to me, and partially, like, the Needler is probably the thing on this list that I'm most nostalgic for myself, which helps a lot. But also, it just, in terms of the product that they delivered compared to the product that they promised, it was actually a match. Mm-hmm. Like it lived up to the hype, and the Gjallarhorn kind of couldn't help but live up to the hype, even though there are issues with the product. It just is so big and weird and bizarre.
Ridiculous.
That, like, it's just fun to own.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the Boba Fett one, time will tell, because we're just starting to get, like, video reviews of it and stuff. But generally what I'm seeing is, like, if you really love Boba Fett and you've always wanted a Boba Fett blaster toy and you're not a Nerf person, you're going to be fine with it. It's the same that it was in with the Mandalorian rifle. But, like, anyone that knows what Nerf is capable of producing is kind of like, on it. And again, it's the hype that they built that they didn't
need. You know, I think it's stuff like tie-ins with, say, Star Wars especially, was really good even, you know, prior to this, when they just had their Star Wars blasters that they came out with. A lot of people in the cosplay community really liked them because they were almost a one-to-one replica, you know, size-wise, right, of what they could get. And it was so much cheaper for them to just buy one of those and either just keep it the same way or paint it to look, you know, like a prop for cosplay. There's a huge market for this, and tie-ins like that, you know, the alien blaster as well that I have. I still haven't been able to get a hold of mine, but that, you know, the thing is that it's at a family member's. I'm still past the snowed in anyways, but the thing is that the market's there and it's good. It's just that, like you're saying, they're overpromising. The render photos, or the, like, you know, the initial run versions that look really good in photos, they're really kind of over-promising that. Like, kind of like we said with the Sharpie lines, you know, on the Mandalorian. And now we're finding out the Mandalorian blasters have issues with breaking. There's parts in them that break on their own. I think it's in the loading breech. Jolt, you might be able to answer that for me.
From what I can tell, the pieces won from the breech. And even funnier, supposedly, and I'd have to look this up, but I believe the orange re-release doesn't have this issue. They fixed it. They knew this was an issue going
Huh.
Yeah. So there's a problem there, and it's this kind of, either they're over promising or they aren't QCing it, or something is going on. And clearly, you know, we've talked about it as well. KT, you brought it up with kind of some of the issues of Hasbro trying to restructure for trying to get more in their profit, essentially. Obviously, they're trying to figure out markets that they could really capitalize on. This isn't a bad market. It's actually a very good market because it's a lot of, you know, not really kids, but middle-aged people, people who are in their upper 20s to probably mid-40s that are wanting these things. And they a lot of them have the money to potentially spend on it. But, you know, you're really, like, if you buy something and it comes in and it looks amazing and it's fun to use or it's something that you like to put up, kind of like the Needler. I would say, I would agree with you on that the Needler lives up to what that is because it's a really cool display piece and it's really fun to kind of like use it. But when you pay that much and what you get is kind of just basic big box store stuff where, oh, it's okay, it's mediocre, it's fun if you just kind of throw it on the ground and you don't care. And that's the level right. of what we're getting, but we're paying premium prices. People are definitely going to have a bad taste in their mouth from that. They're not going to want to continue to support it. They're not going to want the next one because there's always a gamble. You know, if the Needler was a good one, but the Mandalorian was terrible, you know, people are kind of at a 50-50 of whether they're going to get what they buy. And that doesn't really, you know, bode well for them in the future if they can't kind of, you know, clamp down on that.
Well, and so what we have yet to see, I guess, is, you know, if we look over this history where they've adjusted their timelines and they've looked at different ways to do the pre-orders and it's kind of been up and down a little bit. They did the Needler right. They did the Galorlahorn right-ish.
Gajinglehorn.
The Gajinglehorn, exactly. They did that one right-ish. Mm-hmm. Boba Fett was announced around the same time. Let's see. Boba Fett was announced January 2022. The Needler was announced in October of 2021. So, I mean, like, realistically, the Boba Fett was already in progress when they started to figure out how to do the Needler right. So will the next things do better? And so far the answer is meh, because the Star Trek one is still coming, and we've already discussed how weird of a product that is. But then there's the Fortnite one. Isn't that Fortnite the shark? The like shark one?
No, League of Legends. It's League of Legends. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Okay, sorry. I don't know. Video game with cartoon characters with weird weapons. Whatever.
I think you've just offended a lot of people.
Well, too
it's
bad.
Okay.
The League of Legends one, that I think that is more of a bulwark of what the future of this is, because there's definitely a delay for any lessons that they learn in the process of
I think
of
probably
doing
part
this.
Of the reason I feel so positively on it probably is because from what I've seen, the first one I had seen was the Aliens pulse rifle, and then I got my Needler, and then my friend got the Galarhorn, and they've designed 3D printed shells for it and have basically been just over the moon about it.
Totally.
So I guess my frame of reference is seeing what they've been improving on rather for people who started earlier.
Yeah, rather than the misses. You've been able to see the hits, not more than the misses.
Yeah.
Speaking of potential hits, moving on, we got to talk about the new Dart Zone patent. Speaking of innovations, this looks weird, it's weird to see this stage. I mean, obviously, this isn't the first time we've seen patents for upcoming concepts that may or may not ever even become blasters, but you know, it's weird to look at the patent sketch, which is obviously nowhere near a product that they would actually sell, because, you know, the patent itself says that part of the concept is to have an aesthetically pleasing product, which is probably not like an existing pistol grip that they have with a giant disc on top.
Horizontally
I mean, placed.
The patent drawing kind of reminded me of the FBL-1 and like its shaping or whatever.
Yeah.
It was just like two big flywheels in the front, a pan in the center, because the original FBL was like cylinder fed, and then like a big grip in the back, and that's all there was.
Well, so what do y'all think would actually be the benefits of us getting a mechanism like this? Like, what could this actually look like? Does anyone have predictions?
I have a feeling that this is, so a lot of times when you do a patent like this, it's mostly to get the mechanism patented, not necessarily the design aspect. You can work around it in multiple ways. And obviously we've seen that Dart Zone has come up with strange loading mechanisms, right? We've got the Conquest, we've got the Dictator, we've got the Vulcanator. We've got a lot of, obviously they have a ton of drum mag fed stuff. So this, obviously I have a feeling that it's just an option. Maybe it is, because we do know that there are realistic firearms that do use this, obviously, this particular type of mag. I've also seen
The Dino concept Blade.
Yeah, we've also seen concept drawings from Hot Coin, actually, that look very similar to this, which is actually kind of funny to me that I see a Dart Zone patent that looks like a Hot Coin concept art, you know. So
one thing that definitely I noticed on the patent is they specifically note doesn't get in the way of the user's offhand, which kind of, I think one of the reasons that line of thinking may have come into play is with their release of the Tomcat, because one of the number one issues I hear is when I prime this thing, my arm hits the drum magazine.
Mm.
And so potentially during the development cycle of the Tomcat, that may have been something that they ran into. So it got them in the line of thinking, well, what if we put it on the top?
Yeah.
The other interesting thing I think we could see with it, because it's a pan style drum, if you were to have gravity fed darts, so like a multi-layered pan magazine, it wouldn't have to have the issue of a drum magazine where it's vertical, and so depending on the position the darts might shift around a bunch. Since it's just horizontal, you could potentially stack that pan upwards to hold even more darts than just the base shown 15.
Right. Yep.
I mean, that's kind of a Tomcat type feature, right? Multiple darts within that drum that just gravity drop into the line.
There's even potentially room for them to potentially put spring assistant in there if they wanted
to. Sounds to me like an upside down Hailfire or that
basically
dart blaster.
A Tempest, kind of.
It would be cool to see, because Dart Zone's aesthetic styling has leaned, I think, more firearm-y, not in a way that makes me think that they're like dangerous to use outside per se, but like, you know, they, whereas Nerf or Busby is more likely to make things that look like sci-fi
props. Very, very toyish looking.
Dart Zone is definitely more. I would love to see this as an opportunity for Dart Zone to be like, okay, well, we have this weird mechanism, we can shell it in a way that is more of a unique design choice rather than just a firearm-y thing, because, you know, we know that pan type magazines exist in real firearms, but it's not something that anyone thinks about.
Yeah, it's kind of like they were from like World War II era firearms, so people are less likely to think, oh, scary. They're like, oh, it's more based on an antique, it's less fresh in the mind. People, it's easier to spin it in more of a toy like aspect than say like the 1.2, which has AR-15 aesthetic to it, which is more fresh in the mind.
So I'd love for them to take this as something like this as an opportunity to like really go out with their design, with their design choices. I think that'd be pretty cool. Moving on with out there design choices and sci-fi aesthetics, Domachevsky released the Mega XL and shotgun shell Hammervault. I practiced pronouncing this and I'm still not sure I'm doing it correct.
Hammervault?
But and I mean, I'm definitely anglicizing it quite a bit, but just knowing how much to pronounce the R and how to pronounce the W was something that I actually thought about. Did y'all take a look at this?
I saw the video and it looks freaking cool.
It's incredible.
It looks so
cool. It looks really cool. Yeah, I thought it looked ridiculous from the screen grabs and stuff that we had on the video. I thought that looked really awesome.
Yeah, I love how the first thing Domo did when he got freaking Mega XL was think, time to put it in a shell.
Yes.
I love that.
Put it in a shell and then feed the shells out of clips.
So I didn't get a chance to take a look into it any further on how the file or the mechanism, because from the video it does look like when he primes it back, that, you know, obviously moves the clip to the next round, And when he primes it forward, it literally just pushes the dart into the flywheels? Is that how that works?
As far as I can tell, the pump mechanism, I didn't look at the files, but I've spent a bunch of time looking at the videos and stuff. As far as I can tell, the priming action is both the loading, the advancing, and the like pusher. Mm-hmm. To actually push it into the flywheels. So like when he pushes it forward, it pushes into the flywheels, and then when he pulls back, it advances it to the next one. And then you push forward and it pushes the next one into the flywheels.
It makes sense when you think about it, because like trying to hook up a trigger to a stroke that long just ain't gonna happen.
It's so simple. Yeah. But it's such a I love it because it's so simple. It's such a simple concept. You know, we're all trying to think of like, oh, a pusher mechanism or full auto or whatever. And just literally making your priming handle just push it forward into the flywheel.
It's kind of like a Super Soaker is what it reminds me of.
Yes, yes. I love the simplicity of it, but just the absolute absurdity at the same time.
Absolutely.
It feels it's like so something good. You'd see out of like Doom.
Yes.
And it's another one of these things that has the potential, because it's shell fed, mm-hmm. right? Like there's so many different things that you can do with it. I love that as a potential platform.
Not necessarily because it's flywheel.
Well, the four shot elite actually, because the flywheel design.
That is something too, but I'm not actually clear on how he's flywheeling for elite.
The rail cleaner.
I'm
pretty sure they're just smushed in there together.
So the rail cleaner is it literally has like these tall flywheels and it pushes all four darts. It squeezes all four darts together and just kind of shotguns them out. It works because you know the rail cleaner was just the most ridiculous. Domachevsky is known for these kind of absurd creations. And that's a very old one, but it's funny that four elites stacked together is just well enough. It works perfectly. Like the geometry works perfectly enough that a mega dart, like a mega XL, could go right through the same flywheels and
okay.
work. So yeah, like I said, if you take a look at the older creations of Domachevsky, this was something that has been kind of figured out. It's just funny that in this creation, it could shoot both. And it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's absurd. I love it.
I love it. That's so good. The other thing that I really love about this that I wanted to make sure we highlighted in the video, which I did, is that Domachevsky has a like fictional world built around his designs. And I think that that's so cool. The premise of it is that there's like a futuristic world where all these things are tools that are used by like a team that guards the train system and make sure the trains run on time against some like unknown enemy. Really fascinating and just kind of neat to have like a fiction built around your designs, and then you get to have this object in real world.
It's funny, I only see that with some of the people in the integration community who do a lot of integration work and build their own. A lot of people in that community as well will build their own worlds around, you know, and whole backstories and stuff like that to the blasters they build. So
see the lore for that you've described for the Hammerfall, it kind of reminds me of something that you'd hear out of like a Valorant or CSGO type map or something like that, which is I think that's kind of neat.
Totally. Yeah. I love that. I forgot what I was going to say.
Incredible.
Anyway, with that incredible transition, it's time to play What's That Blaster, the game that where someone on the team picks a blaster from the Nerf brand from sometime in history and reads a modified version of the official description for that blaster. I am stumbling over my words because I just got two of the new Lego Brown classic space minifigs, and they come with little baby space Lego minifigs, and they're just so cute, and I'm just like obsessing with them and like moving them around on my desk while I talk. I'm sorry. I need to put this aside.
The best fidget toy.
They're amazing. Anyway, someone picks a Nerf blaster from sometime in history, reads the official description with some modifications to obscure it, and the rest of the team tries to guess what the blaster is. If you guess it immediately, everyone on the guessing part of the team scores 4 points. There are 3 lifelines available, and for each lifeline that you use, you lose 1 potential point. The lifelines are the original release year of the blaster, the original retail price of the blaster, and the blaster's original stock capacity. This week, it's Jolt's turn to pick the blaster, which is always bad news for the rest of us.
Yeah,
Currently the score is I have 4 points because I was only involved in 1 successful guess. Vile has 7 points because he was involved in guessing my with 1 lifeline, mine last time with Taffy. And Jolt has 11 points. And today is Grim's chance to get on the board. So, of course, if you're playing along, let us know what your score is and how you're doing down in the comments.
Of course, the one day I decide to show up, it's Jolt who's the one who's running.
Yeah,
you're out of luck, Chris.
Yeah.
You're out of luck.
Just yeah. Your luck.
Okay.
All right, I tried to go easy on you guys this time. Hopefully you'll get this. All right. You'll be the ultimate zombie hunter with the blank blaster. Load one of your powerful zombie strike blanks and draw the string back so you're locked and loaded. When a zombie crosses your path, take your shot with a quick pull of the trigger and load another blank. Get ready to bring down the zombies one by one with the blank blaster.
Okay. It's zombie strike and it's shooting arrows.
It's going to be...
The question is...
It could be the Dreadbolt.
Oh!
Or not Dreadbolt.
No,
the...
it can't be the Dreadbolt because you pull the string back. It has to be the other one. What is the other smaller crossbow called?
Oh,
because
no.
That's the one where you actually pull the string back. It said draw back the string.
Yeah.
That's the giveaway.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's the same one that there was a Rebel version and then an Elite version that's very, very similar
yes.
in its shape.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. What was that thing called? This is gonna kill me, and I know that I know this one. I've seen it multiple times.
Did it share part of the name with Dreadbolt? Did it have Bolt?
I was pretty sure.
Or did it start?
I get the feeling it did.
Or did it have Dread in it?
No, it didn't have Dread. I'm pretty sure it did have
Cross.
I don't even.
What are the other crossbows? There's because the only other thing is. There wasn't a Zombie Strike version of, like, the Diamondista, right? No. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a dart shooting.
No, there wasn't. No.
There was only the two crossbows, the small, like, pistol one.
This game is so infuriating because I definitely have 3 of these downstairs. I definitely own multiple of these. Like, the word is on the object within, like, 20 steps of where I'm sitting, but I cannot go look at it. That would not be... following
it's
the
not
rules.
The crossbolt, is it?
No.
That's what I was wondering.
The crossbolt is an elite blaster.
Okay, that's what.
No,
that
you're
is.
Not supposed to tell us that. But thanks for the free
thanks
hint.
For the hint.
I so. Feel bad for you. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we need any of
the
lifelines.
The bolt up one.
No, the crossbolt is the one people use for integrations,
that's
and they don't
the
want
one.
To hurt
yeah,
a
yeah.
Raven.
Okay, so that's the crossbolt. The Dreadbolt was the larger one, and then the only other one
was
the
larger
one.
And
I don't
and
remember
the smaller one.
Any...
And that's the one we're trying to yeah. remember. And that sucks because I don't feel like any of the lifelines are going to help us remember the name.
Because we know exactly what blaster
because I feel
we're
bad
talking.
For you.
We know what it is.
Do
we
you?
Definitely know what it is.
We
because
just don't
the string,
remember the name.
Do you?
The string is the giveaway.
My hint to you, because I feel bad, is the description may be slightly misleading.
Oh, not again. How many
I know.
Of these descriptions... How many of these descriptions are poorly... Oh, my God.
I want to have a word with Hasbro about this.
I've noticed that it looks like they copy and paste descriptions
they definitely
from
do.
One to another.
They definitely
yeah.
do. But, well, because we bumped into that last time, right, when I did the Rebel one, where, like, there was definitely bow language in in the thing that was not actually relevant to what was happening. Okay. It couldn't be like the crossfire bow, because it shoots multiple back to back, right?
It's like, and in it, single shot with a smart AR.
Yeah.
I don't remember this one. I actually don't.
Remember there was that bow with the cylinder on it as well?
The Outbreaker bow?
Yeah, I think it was called the Outbreaker
bow. Yeah, but again, it had a cylinder. I mean, like, there is a string on it, but that's...
You did say it was misleading, though, right?
Yeah.
Can you read the description again?
Bolt.
I would be willing to do that. You'll be the ultimate zombie hunter.
Wrathbolt. Wrathbolt is the name of the one we're thinking
about.
That
is the name of the smaller version of the Dreadbolt. I will confirm that, at least. That is the name of that blaster.
All right. Okay. Go ahead and read the description again.
You'll be the ultimate zombie hunter with the blank blaster. Load one of your powerful zombie strike blanks and draw the string back so you're locked and loaded when a zombie crosses your path. Take your shot with a quick pull of the trigger and load another blank. Get ready to bring down the zombies one by one with the blank blaster.
See, it says one by one and other stuff.
Okay.
Like that. So I get the feeling that there are follow-ups.
I will... Okay, so here's the thing.
It says load
if
another.
If we use a lifeline...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
If we... My only thing is, if we use a lifeline, and if that other bow with a cylinder has a capacity, we would use the lifeline of what was its original stock capacity, because the Dreadbolt and the Wrathbolt are both only single capacity.
And then the Crossfire bow was 4, and then the Outbreaker bow was 5.
Exactly. Right. So that would narrow down.
That would narrow it down.
You want to use that lifeline then?
Because I do feel confident that it's not the Dreadbolt, because the Dreadbolt is plunger system.
No, it's not.
Because it has the lever load.
It is not a plunger system.
No.
It is a string.
It is a string.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying that's... Wait, the Dreadbolt?
Yeah, the Dreadbolt is a plunger system. It just has a lever on the bottom to prime the string.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Regardless, you don't pull the string back on it. You pull the lever forward. Okay, should we use that lifeline?
I would say use that lifeline. Narrow it down.
Okay, right. We would like to use the stock capacity lifeline, please.
Stock capacity is 4.
What?
Crossfire bow. It's the crossfire bow.
Is that your final answer?
Wait. What? Nerf, get your business together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that your final answer? Crossfire bow.
I mean, that makes sense. Yes. If the stock capacity is 4, I feel like that's gotta be what it is, right?
Yeah, they didn't release anything else like that with 4.
Okay. Right. Are we locking it in?
Yeah.
You are correct. That is exactly what
it
is.
Oh my god.
Yep. It is the crossfire bow.
Nerf. What is
I have a feeling it could be that one potentially.
Yeah.
Okay,
I didn't think you guys would instantly think arrows.
Well, it said, it sounded, it had language that said one at a time. It had language that was like powerful. It specifically called them powerful.
You have to remember the zombie strike line was at its infancy when the crossfire bow came out. So they were going to use language like that and whatnot with it.
It also says when a zombie crosses your path.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at least they do have somebody writing these who's mildly intelligent.
Yeah, they do love to do that. They do love to, like, put that...
I thought that would have been a dead giveaway, but no, apparently not.
Well, because I caught... When did I catch language like that? Anyway, whatever. All right. Okay, so that puts me at 7, Violet 10, Jolt at 11, and Grimms is entering the board at 3.
Hooray!
Beautiful.
Welcome in, Grimms.
All right. Welcome to hell. welcome to Jolt King's Nerf Wiki hell. That might be what we have to rename the game. Okay. moving on forward, a design I'm super excited about is the Leaf, designed by Sean Ye, printed so far by Silver Fox Industries. And I'm just excited about it. It's cute. It's fun. It is pocketable. It looks like a really cool design. I ordered one like instantaneously. Hopefully I'll get it soon. I don't know what their backlog is like. Here's my main question. What is that plunger tube?
It's a metal rectangle. Like when I was up there, it's literally just like a metal rectangle that they source somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's less a plunger tube and more of a plunger block.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it is a tube, but it is like he's saying it actually, if you were,
I do know
it is topographically.
I do know from when I was up there, they mentioned it's the hardware is kind of costly, which is why the price is what it is.
I was going to ask you, Grim.
So
is it like a radius edge in a rectangle, like it's sort of oval shaped?
So the thing is that like this was months ago when I was up there, and they were just barely talking about it at the time. So like all I remember is there was a metal rectangle, and they have a weird size spring that goes in there, basically. And the spring sourcing is weird, and hardware cost is kind of weird, which is why it is the price it is. That's about all I remember.
It's funny because you describe it as really expensive, but I was actually just looking on Amazon right now. There is actually a listing for the Pocket Strike, but if you search for Pocket Strike on Amazon, you won't find it. If you Google Pocket Strike, you can find a link to the reviews for the Pocket Strike, which links to the one store that is selling them, and they have like 7 left in stock. They are $25 currently on Amazon, and like this is pretty typical for websites like Amazon and Walmart that have other stores that sell through them to have older products available on them at higher prices, because it's like the very tail end of the stock or whatever, and they just raise the prices because sometimes it's automated, like the price goes up because the quantity that's available is low. But currently they cost about the same.
Yeah, so see, the interesting thing I discovered when I was talking to Vile actually earlier, if you check eBay, the cheapest Pocket Strike that has sold on eBay to date currently is the same price as the SFI Leaf.
Yeah.
The other ones was like $44, and then one was like $55, basically.
Oh my god.
So the only current way, unless you're really lucky, like Vile mentioned, and you find a Pocket Strike in a listing where they don't know what they have, and it's just listed in there. If you're directly searching for a Pocket Strike, it's going to be at least the price of a Leaf. Yeah. And the Leaf comes in like a variety of cool filaments. You can get like a rose gold plunger tube and like other stuff like that. And it shoots half darts. So I think it's cool.
I'm excited about that because I love to carry like some kind of vaguely viable blaster with me. I frequently carry
the Whisper.
I love carrying a Whisper, partly because there's no way anybody is ever going to think that's a firearm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's goofy, it's unique and interesting enough that it gives me an opportunity to talk about the hobby with people if they want to know what it is. And I get to talk about 3D printing, and I get to talk about Nerf, and I get to talk about custom building. I get to show them how powerful it is. Something like this is not as powerful, but it's even smaller. And it's cool because it's like I can talk about the history, and I can still talk about 3D printing, and I can talk about custom building, and there's multiple hobby people involved in it. I'm super excited to have one of these on hand.
Yeah.
I will definitely be looking at one eventually. I'm not going to get it yet, but because of...
yeah, I can't get one right now due to budget constraints, but like I want to get one, and I've been... After I got my slab from them, I've taken a liking to their gemstone ruby red filament. It's kind of a semi-translucent red that's really pretty. I kind of want to get a Whisper with like a rose gold plunger tube and gemstone ruby red done up from them at some point.
I got to get one in yellow, obviously.
Yeah, of course you do. Jolt needs the end strike, pocket strike. I don't even remember what color I ordered, and I'm not going to look it up, so it'll be a pleasant surprise.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
That's how you make content. You order stuff in random colors, and then you film yourself opening it and being either really excited or offended. sometimes I kind of wish you could more places would do a random color order, because like, you know, when you order like internal parts from Out of Darts, you often have not even the option. They're just like, if it's an internal part, we're just going to print it in whatever we have lying around to use up filament, which is great. That's what they should do. I wish I could order like a real blaster in like random whatever you have lying around, because I remember when ordering, one of my bands did a vinyl release, and one of the options was like random color. And it's usually like a swirl of like brown with a little bit of color swirling through it, because they just mix all the leftover vinyl from other cuts into it. I think it'd be really interesting to be able to order a blaster in that, where you just get like layered leftovers of print, and they give you like a slight.
At the very least,
I know it's tough because it's more work for them to use up those bits of plastic, but also you're recycling material. So like, I don't know, even if it was like just the normal price with the balance of like, well, we're using up junk material, but we have to spend more labor.
At the very least, from what I remember when I was working and doing the printers up at SFI, a lot of times the remainder prints that we got left over up there, or like filament left over, there wasn't realistically enough to even do parts out of them, was the problem you would run into. Like, I remember I tried it one time with a remainder roll, and I remember I thought never again, because at the end of the print it was down to like, there was like an inch of filament left out of it, and the print finished just perfectly.
Oh,
but had that not, that would have been hours of a wasted print and whatnot.
Yeah,
unless,
and I was like, I was I just about had a heart attack when I saw it finishing up with like the remaining like 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, I don't know if that's enough filament left.
I was going to say, unless you have a runout sensor that'll stop the print, and you can just put in whatever color you have next of a small roll, and it literally, and don't purge it, just let it go.
So technically, you can do that, but from what I remember, the advice I got from Ryan and Jesse when I was up there, the only time you can do that really is when it's doing infill, basically, because otherwise it leads to weird inconsistencies to the exterior of the part.
That's
basically
perfect, though. That's what I'm looking for.
So as long as you stop it at the infill point, so when it's doing infill still, you can get away with it, technically. It would just be a lot more work, because you'd have to actively monitor the print and whatnot, since there isn't any point in which it can actually stop at. If, for example, they had smaller prints and it wasn't just full-size blasters they did, it would probably be easier for a company like them to do. Out of Darts has the advantages that they have a lot of small things like switch plates that they can just print off with runoff filament. Yeah. And plenty of other stuff, for like Containment Crew, they have plenty of small little bits and bobs they can print. So it's definitely a cool thing and is possible. It just requires a lot more work and paying attention on the printer side, and like depends on the scaling of the stuff that you have that you're printing off and whatnot.
Well, speaking of full-size blaster prints, couple other community things that we got to look at on the show. The FLP03... Vile, you reported on this. What did you think of this little CQB sort of setup? How does this compare to, because we've seen a few things like this recently. Like, how do you think this compares?
I think it's,
because this is a fly core one. This is the fly core one.
Yeah, it is a fly core, you know, system, and that's why I said it's part of the ecosystem, because obviously Old Fusion Designs, who was the creator of the fly core, made that available for people to build around it. So I like seeing more entries into this fly core, like I said, ecosystem, this whole group of blasters that are going around, that are getting built. I have a bunch of ideas of stuff that I want to use the fly core for. I have my own project, so seeing other people, you know, already kind of jumping into it and coming up with some fun little ones. When I looked at it, because it's like a little bullpup style, you know, pistol, it almost made me think of the Cage Fighter, or from Radio Silence, or the Luchadora, similar, you know, design.
So,
oh yeah, I see it.
The thing that I almost see with it is it almost feels like it's in a family of three current blasters that are out, including that one, that are all from different creators. You have the Piara from Drac, which was trying to be like kind of like a Raven, but like not something you shoulder, and supposed to be compact, and that takes his Twilight Wheels and more full-size things. You have the Cage Fighter and Luchadora from Radio Silence, and then you have this entry, and all three of them are trying to tackle the same thing, where they're trying to make a compact straight talon bullpup, but like each of them went about different ways of doing things, while Drax, as seen in Out of Darts reviews, had its own various issues and other things with it, and the scaling's a bit almost too large to be a compact bullpup, but also too small to be like something that you shoulder.
Yeah.
and then you have the Luchadora, and then you have this thing. It almost looks like it would be a more pleasant entry compared to the other two, because it looks to be more ergonomic than something like the Luchadora, but also it looks like they got the scaling down compared to the PR.
I was going
to
say, there's another one that you could possibly put in there, and that's the Manatee.
But that one's almost more of like a full size.
It's a little bit closer. So because it is meant to be shouldered, but it's for single hand use. And I remember I ran one at a game when I was in San Diego. And to me, it was weird because my offhand, I always wanted to grab a grip. It was natural for me to want to grab because the balance and the weight of it really makes you feel like you should be. And what I liked about this little fly core is because it has that little foregrip on it, it gives you some place to actually put your hand for that kind of CQ.
This was my number one complaint with like the Raven. I hate how the Raven feels. There's nowhere to put my hand.
Yes. So
I know at least with kind of Drax thing with his Piara, it's kind of similar to how the Raven, you're not necessarily always using the stock as a stock, but rather as like an arm brace type of thing. And that's kind of how the PR was designed. You see him using it with like one hand almost outwards and using the stock like an arm brace. But it at that point, it makes more sense that there's not a front grip, but it's just an awkward, very niche kind of way of using a blaster.
I think it's similar to like, so like I have my Luchadora and it's kind of strange because the weight is so far in the back. It's fun. I like it. It's just it's such a weird play style. Like, you know, if you were going to be using it, but with having that thing in the front, it allows you to use it with that extended because it is small enough, but it has something when you are, say, you know, against a wall, if you're taking cover, it gives you a place to put your offhand. And I do kind of like that little piece. Just that one fact that it has a foregrip on it makes a huge difference to me between them all.
It looks kind of, aesthetically, it looks bizarre to a sort of extent, but I kind of like it. There's something about it that I really, really like. It has a very toy bullpup feeling rather than like necessarily something that's going overly real steel. I think it's probably just how the front foregrip and the grip section are designed, I think, is probably what's making me feel that way, but I just like the way it looks overall. It's cute, okay. I guess is what I describe it as.
It is cute. Okay, so moving our magazine up in front of our grip, what do you all think of the GNK 200?
The gonk.
The gonk from Mein Gonk.
Yes.
A kind of an interesting form factor for what I'm used to seeing out of 3D printed blasters. It's one of these blasters that I think is very reliant on the community making good choices in its building to keep it safe. But obviously, like, it's a pretty advanced build. It's not something that someone's going to build who's playing at the schoolyard.
Right. Yeah. This one required a lot more. When I looked through the list on. I said it as well. Gonk put a ton into the description and into the write up. There's code files for you to run on your Arduino. It had the pinouts for your Arduinos. Like this requires a little bit more than just wiring some stuff up. You're having to put in the program and the coding and obviously you're getting brushless. You're getting into a much higher end in build. And I liked it though because the step files were available, which means that in the community, you can build off of it. If you're a designer or a creator, or if you like to kit bash of these designs, I think it's a really good starting point. And the fact that the stock, I have been actually looking at trying to make my own folding stock actually for 3D printing, and looking at the one that Gonk made, Mein Gonk made, was really, it was actually very simple because I wanted to kind of use a worker one. Gonk's already kind of figured it out, and it looks sturdy. It looks actually about the right size. It was kind of a nice, and seeing something that's in a step file allows me to modify it and potentially build off of it for my own little personal reasons for whatever. And I love when people do make things open source to the point that it's like, this is supposed to be a community blaster. I've got the basics figured out for you to build the blaster and enjoy it or go further with it as a community. So
I do like a well-documented design. Yeah.
I remember someone described this almost as like a low polygon, low hardware momentum, basically. Yes. And I can kind of see where they're coming from with the way it's shaped and whatnot. But at the same time, I definitely think it will probably fit its own role, because I don't know. I don't think it's full auto, is it?
I believe it is.
Well, it's brushless.
Yeah, it's
right?
a brushless, so... and it's running an Arduino and a solenoid as well. So you can you should be able.
It's solenoid, so like it's kind of whatever you want. Yeah. To
if
be.
It's not already, you could.
I was going to say, if it wasn't, then it would technically fill a different role than the momentum. But I guess in this case, this really is just kind of, in its own sense, kind of like a low hardware.
Well, I mean,
momentum,
if you
yeah.
I guess.
When you're brushless and solenoid, it's kind of just whatever you can code into it is just what it is.
And the thing is, if you look at the momentum, that's a buy-in. You're buying the momentum, you know, as a blaster. This one is one that you're building. So this is definitely something for those who like to do the work themselves, who want to customize it themselves. Mm-hmm. Like I said, everything's open source for you to basically fine tune and do whatever you want with.
The only this comparison isn't really fair to the Gonk, because the Gonk really is its own very cool thing, but the closest thing that the comparison kind of in my head makes is like similar to like the Kestrel and a Pew Pew kind of. Mm-hmm. The Pew Pew has a lot of features built into it and is small, whereas the Kestrel is also has a lot of the same features, but it's a little larger, and it has less features, but it's a build it yourself type of thing that you can't get somewhere else. You have to do all the work yourself and put in all the stuff. Although I will say that comparison isn't exactly fair, because the Kestrel is a brush full auto blaster, whereas the Pew Pew is a highly advanced brushless blaster. But that's the closest comparison my brain can.
I would say the Gonk. The Gonk, for anybody who's probably wanting to get into brushless, because of how well it was documented, I would say it's probably the best entry for those wanting to get into brushless.
Yeah, I'd say that's.
I would say that's where the Gonk is really going to shine, is for those who don't, because obviously we have, you know, the Narfduino setups, and getting those boards sometimes is really hard because there's only small batches made. You know, if you're not doing your own coding, obviously you have to do all this. Gonk laid it all out, laid out the motors you needed, laid out the you know ESCs, laid out the pinouts, like quite literally everything for you. It's written up, as opposed to here's a board, now go figure it out on your own. You know,
I also just really like the way this thing looks. Aesthetically, it's just very pleasing to my eyes. It looks a lot better than something, for example, like the FBL Basic, which I didn't like the design on that one as much. They're kind of in a similar vein as well, I suppose, but this one just looks very nice. It's compact, minimal,
and very pretty. Definitely be in the higher tier for playing areas. This is for a dual stage brushless like that. It definitely, you know, it can be high rate of fire, it can be very high FPS, it can be, you know, there it is definitely going to be, and even the cost, obviously, for all the parts is going to be a little bit higher than most people are willing to spend. But again, I do like, because it's the same thing like the Pew Pew, right? Like, not, you know, Pew Tech can only get out so many of them, and even then, there's only so many people who are probably going to be able to afford it. So it is going to definitely be still sort of a niche blaster, I believe, for a while until, more
things. I will say, though, compared to something like the Pew Pew, even if you had all the stuff to make a Pew Pew, the way it's designed and how compact it is, it's so daunting with how it's made internally that most people wouldn't probably want to work on one anyways, whereas this is well-documented, larger, more serviceable, and I just want to see, I'm excited for this thing, and I want to see more people out there using them. The thing that comes to my brain hearing the idea of people getting tagged out with this thing is Gonk Bonked.
That's funny.
Ha!
That's awesome. Well, I think it's time to gonk bonk this episode of Provisional News Network. Great. Who wants to plug their stuff?
Well, for once, Bile? Actually, I would like to say quickly.
Joel, do
for
it.
Once, we don't have to go anywhere. We're good on time because I got all my hot glue eating done beforehand, waiting for the bastard Vile to actually show up.
Technology just didn't like me today, okay?
It is what it is, I suppose.
But you know what? You could check me out on Twitch. I stream Fridays and Saturdays, 12 p.m. Pacific until 8 p.m. both days. So that's where you normally see me, or my Instagram as well. Usually I'm pretty active over there. So I do have a YouTube channel. If maybe one day I'll upload another video.
I'm on a lot of platforms, so the easiest way to find me would do Linktree. I think it's Linktree/GrimmsNerfWorks, and that'll plug all of my stuff. I have Instagram, Twitch, Discord, YouTube. I upload in a lot of different places, so that would be the best way to find me.
Beautiful. Jolt is, of course, on TikTok. And I will be up late tonight finishing my audio log. I release, in addition to doing all my Nerf stuff, I release a weekly EP of music, which is always a little bit different. I'll be writing a song a day again next month. So find me at Kinetic Turtle on whatever platform you like. It all links back through. I have a link tree, and that'll kind of take you wherever. I am also working. Finally, I am finally releasing a video about Nerf Elite Junior this weekend, assuming I can finish the editing tomorrow. It's very close. It's almost done. I really wanted to spend some time on that and make sure I get it right. So that is there to look forward to on the Family Foam Sport YouTube channel. All the links to everybody's stuff will be down in the description, as always. Thank you, everybody. It was so good to have all four of us here for this episode. And we kept it short. We just crossed the hour mark, which is honestly impressive. we're way closer to the time that we initially said we thought our podcast would be. And I feel like we had a lot of good things to say. So good job, everybody. Pat yourselves in the back.
Hell yeah.
Give yourselves some good congratulations. Hell yeah.
Hooray.
Great job, team. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Peace. All right. We can start now.